to the Stay at Home Mom Yeah Right podcast. You are about to listen to my mom. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you like it, please give it 5 stars. Thank you.
Everyone, and welcome to the Stay at Home Mom Yeah Right podcast. I'm Sarah Smith, your host, and I'm honored to be joined by Ayana Davis. She is an autism advocate who brings positive attention and awareness to autism. She is also an artist, illustrator, fashion designer, and author of many books. She's also living with autism and is complete in ultimate goals. She is so cool. So welcome to my podcast, Ayana. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thank you. How has this past year been like for you and your family in the pandemic?
Well, like when we first got into the pandemic, it was really challenging because, and I'm sorry, my voice, I have a little cold.
It's okay.
It was challenging because of the fact that, I thrive on, routine. So My routine was completely thrown off during the pandemic. But about halfway through, I started finding things that I could do to just fill the void of the things that I couldn't do, like go to my in-person therapies that I needed. Of course, we still had the Zoom therapies, but some are just more effective, in person, like DBT, for instance. So, which is dialectical behavioral therapy. And, but then the past, cause I believe we're still in a pandemic.
Oh, we are.
The past 6 months have actually been like nothing I ever imagined. As far as speaking out about autism and my experiences with it and, living and in my opinion, thriving with it. So it's definitely been a life change and, for the better because, I feel like a lot of attention that people hear about autism is always negative and it doesn't have to be.
Exactly. And that's why you stood out to me on Instagram. I don't know how I came across your page, but I'm like, oh my gosh, she is so incredible. Just shining this light on autism and she's completely thriving and using your platform for the better that so many people with autism can benefit from. So I'm so happy that you're here to speak about it.
Thank you.
And I have a bunch of questions for you. So, you have autism and you were diagnosed later in life.
Yes.
Why do you think that they missed the diagnosis for so long?
Well, a part of of course, I do believe that race is the factor. One of the factors, because, I feel a teacher may have caught it, a pediatrician could have caught it. But when you see a Black child, you really don't think of autism. You think of white children, white boys in particular. So I could have been having the same autistic traits as a white child. But, since I was a little Black girl, they were just like, oh, well, maybe she'll grow out of it. And that was that. But the way I feel it was missed also is because I'm an artist and I've always been artistic. And you know how they're artists are mad creatives running around and they're eccentric. And so it was just my parents were always just leave her alone. She wants to draw, just let her go draw. So I was always somewhere doing some form of art. Of course I did the visual art. There was a period where I did performing arts. So theater, dance. So I was always in some type of, artistic, program where I could be creative. And when you're in those type of environments, you're forced to do and have, social interactions, which helped me, I believe also kind of hide it. Even though, I was unaware, I do not even believe I knew what autism was, but so I see how it was missed. It was missed because one, I'm an artist and we're eccentric, and two, race and gender.
So what was it like growing up for you then? having autism, but did not have this diagnosis. So what was it like all those years when you were little and you were eccentric and you were an artist? How did people treat you?
Well, since I was an artist, I got a lot of attention for that, which I freaking hated. Since I was an artist, I was always like, when I did theater, I could escape. I could be another character. I didn't have to understand myself. Like growing up, I didn't understand myself. I knew I was different. I always say this, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just different. So I knew I was different, but I just didn't know why. And again, like even myself, I was just like, well, I'm just a creative person. Just, you know, let me go paint. Let me go draw. Let me go paint a mural. So it was just like, it's really like brings it back to my creativity. I was just always a creative person, but like taking the art out of the equation, I was what we thought was shy. Withdrawn, which really I had anxiety and I was having like sensory overload. But again, we knew nothing about that. So we didn't know what it was. I was a loner. I'm still kind of a loner. Like I know a lot of people, but I like to be by myself a lot. Because like the sensory issues, sometimes it's hard to have a conversation and not be overloaded or having people around you and having people touching you. And so it was always just like, I kind of chose to withdraw. Of course, you know, kids know when people are different. Some bullied me, some protected me. You know, you take the good with the bad, but it was definitely me always questioning why am I like this? Why am I different? What's wrong with me? But nothing's wrong with me. So that's what it was like.
So going back to the race part, you believe that race played a factor in that. How did you finally get that diagnosis? Like, were your parents saying, no, we believe that there's something that she needs some kind of a diagnosis? Or were the doctors saying one thing and your parents saying another?
How do you believe? My parents didn't know anything about autism. So it was, Black children are actually diagnosed 3 years, 3 years later than, you know, their white peers.
Okay, I never knew that.
If they get a diagnosis at all. But the way I got mine was, like, I do have a seizure disorder. So I had been in the hospital for about 2 months, maybe three. But something else wasn't connecting between me and my doctors. And you know that like a lot of autistic people do have seizures because autism is a neurological disorder, not a mental illness like some people think. It is a neurological disorder. So a lot of autistic people do have seizures. So I was in the hospital being treated for other things as well because, you know, I think it was the time when I was just going through like a depression. Just because, you know, I was getting older and I was like, okay, well, is life always going to be this hard to live? So my doctors finally said, you know, she's not really speaking to us. We don't know when she's in pain. We don't know what's wrong. Is it okay if we, you know, evaluate her to see if there's something we can diagnose her with to help her just deal with life better and exist in the world in less discomfort? So they did the full evaluation. It took a really long time. It was hard, but they were very, very accommodating. They let me take breaks. They spoke with my dad, just asking him how I was as a child. And then like maybe a day or two later, they came back. They sat down with my treatment team and my dad, of course. And they were like, oh, has anybody ever said that she was on the spectrum? And the answer was yes. And I'll come back to that. But they were like, okay, well, that's what we're finding. She's on the spectrum. Back to hearing it before. When I was just like in regular therapy that, you know, people go to every week to speak with their therapist. I was about 18 years old. I might've been a few years older, but the therapist and he, I don't think he should be a therapist because he's kind of insensitive, but we were just speaking, having my normal therapy. And he was just like, oh, this is very interesting. We're still talking. He's like, oh, this is very interesting. And then finally I was like, what? What's interesting?
Right, right.
Like, like, it sounds like, he's like, it sounds like you can have Asperger's, which by the way, is kind of a offensive term to like people in the autistic community, because it was named after a, I believe he was a professor who was just doing research on autism, but his views were very offensive. So, but he said that, but then he was like, okay, well, what are you going to have for dinner? And I'm just like, okay, well, you just said that you think I'm on the spectrum.
What? He just kept going in the sentence?
Without a care in the world. And I was just like, all right, to him, he's probably just like, oh, well, you know, this little black girl's here for therapy, but she's not here for this, so I'm not going to address this. And he literally was just like asking me what I was having for dinner the next day. And I was like, wait a minute, you're not going to help me. You're not going to do this. And he actually was inappropriate, because when I got out the hospital after I got my diagnosis, he was like, oh, you're back. And he was like making jokes. And I was like, I told my dad, I was like, I can't see him anymore.
Right, right.
I was like, I don't want to talk to him anymore. Get me away from him. Yes. And they'd like, because the therapist I went to were actually like inside of like a hospital. So, you know, they just switched me to the lady down the hall who, she was amazing. I believe she had a little more empathy for people. But yeah, he was so horrible. I think his name was Richard. He was horrible. How did he get like this degree? And I don't understand, but yeah. So like I had heard it before. And, again, it goes back to race and gender. Mm-hmm. I had met like a few, non-Black people who are autistic, and you know, they come out and they tell me, and they're always apologizing. They're like, we're so sorry you had to go through all this. And I'm like, well, it's not y'all fault. Y'all are not the doctors.
Right, right.
But they just told me that they didn't know it was so hard for me to like get the diagnosis and get the treatments that I needed. Mm. You know, they would say they didn't know the entitlement that they had. And they also still have a hard time, you know, getting the help they need in some areas, all because, you know, autism is not like it's not something that's prioritized, and it's stigmatized, but it's not prioritized.
Right. And it's something that's not in a box, because everybody is different. Correct.
Yes. It's definitely a spectrum. Like a lot of us have the same traits, but even our traits that we have similar, like if you have like sound sensitivities, yours can be stronger than somebody else's. So it's still not the same. Like if you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person. And I repeatedly like tell people that, because sometimes people are like, oh, well, my cousin's autistic. I'm not like the cousin.
Right. We're different.
Yeah. And I know sometimes it is said very innocently, because people are just trying to make small talk. But like me personally, it's easier for me to like, if you ask me a question, it's easier for me to speak with you about it than for you to be like, oh, my cousin's autistic. And like some people are even like, oh, my cousin's autistic and doesn't act like you. I'm like, well, they're not me, so.
Oh, man. How old were you when you finally got your diagnosis?
My dad's not here. I'm sorry. He usually helps me.
That's okay.
I believe I was in my late 20s.
Wow. Okay.
I believe, but I may be wrong.
It's okay.
But that is considered a very late diagnosis, being yes. that the average time of diagnosis is about 18 months old, 18 to 24 months old. Three is like the latest. But again, you know, Black children diagnosed 3 years later, in my case, like 30 years later.
So right. Oh, my goodness. Like,
that is really considered a very, very late diagnosis. And honestly, like at that age, sometimes they don't give you a diagnosis at all, even if they know that you are autistic or neurodivergent, because ADHD has a lot of the overlapping symptoms.
Right. Who has been your support system through your diagnosis?
My dad, for the most part. My mama passed away, because I don't want people to be like, well, where's your mother? No, like, she did pass away before she learned that I was autistic, which kind of hurt me because I was looking for a way to tell her because, right. I don't know, you don't ever want your parents to think that it's something that they did while your child is different or mm-hmm. why your child is the way that they are. So, like, you know, I carry a little guilt that she didn't get to find out that it was nothing that she did before she passed away. But it's definitely my dad. Like, even though I'm considered high function, which I do not like functioning labels, because there could be like a service that I need, but they're like, well, she's too high functioning for that. And also, like, imagine someone having a child and they're like, your child is low functioning. Like, imagine hearing that. Functioning labels are definitely harmful. But my dad, even though I'm considered high function, I am unable to live independently. I'm not allowed to drive. I can't go anywhere by myself. He takes me to all my doctor's appointments. He speaks with all my doctors because sometimes I don't understand like the things that they're saying, or I don't understand right. like a treatment that they want to do, or if I need testing, I might not understand the way the doctor wants to explain it, but of course I'll understand my dad. So, I would definitely say my dad. And now, like, the online community, that I've met, just because I have autism, I'm autistic, because, you know, autism has been so stigmatized to the point where, like, I've heard in the past, like when I was newly diagnosed and when I was just starting to speak about it, because for a long time I didn't speak about it. I was embarrassed. I was like, Black people don't get autism. Mm-hmm. Like, I said that just like other people would say, you know, like, oh, you just need to go to church. And I'm just like, oh, I love my God. But right. It's not that simple. But so definitely my dad, number one supporter, you know, he goes above and beyond, and he doesn't have to, because like a lot of people who have like adult children with disorders, sometimes they put them in like homes and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I'm just like blessed that like it doesn't have to do that. And people are like, you don't seem like you need help. I cannot take my own meds. I cannot cross the street by myself. So it doesn't matter what you see. Like, there's always more that you do not know.
Right. What have been some of the common misconceptions that you have faced with having autism?
The common misconceptions about being autistic is that, what I always say, like, Black women are not autistic. And I don't mm-hmm. understand why people right. just can't wrap their finger around that. Maybe it's because, I do know the media is part of the problem. The media pushed the narrative that autistic people are white little boys, that all autistic people are savants. So it's the narrative that's being pushed by the media that is harming the people who are not the things that fall into the narrative that the media pushes. So that's one stigma. You know, Black women aren't autistic. And because, you know, even Black men, people were like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I know some Black men who are autistic, but there are Black women who are autistic as well. Sometimes they are undiagnosed, because I met a few people who feel they are autistic, but they kind of don't know how to go after their diagnosis. Like with me, it was kind of presented to me. So like, right. I didn't have that struggle that they had. But another misconception about autism is that we have no empathy. That is not true. I'm very empathetic to the point where, like, if something's wrong with one of my friends, even if they don't tell me, I'm like, I know something's wrong with you, but when you're ready to speak, I'll be right. here to listen. Other misconceptions. There are so many. one, that it's a mental illness, and it's not a mental illness, it's a neurological disorder. There is a difference. And also that you grow out of autism when you're 18. That's not true. You're autistic your entire life. Your autistic traits may not be as intense as they were when you were a child, but they actually might become more intense, like as in my case. Like, even with my diagnosis and with being treated and everything, some days my traits are very, very intense, and there's not really anything I can do about it. But that's another misconception, is that autism ends when you're 18.
I wonder why people think that.
I have no idea. I think because they kind of keep the autistic adults hidden away. So, because again, we're back to that narrative that we want to push. Like with me, I said this before, like when you think of autism, you don't think of a Black woman's face. When you think of autism, you think of a little white boy. So like even grown white men, they are not like, and then the media also has like their favorite autistic people. Like, the climate activist, Greta Thunberg, she's a favorite. Temple Grandin, she's a favorite. They have no favorite Black autistic people. So it a lot of the stigmatisms come from the media.
Yeah. What do you want others who have autism or parents of children with autism to know?
I want them to know that your child, first, when your child gets an autism diagnosis, please know it's not the end of the world. It might be the end of the world as you know it, but it's the start of a new journey. And know that your child can flourish, maybe not like their siblings, maybe not like their cousins, but they can flourish in their own way. And also try to find things that make your child comfortable. Try to like cater to the things that you see that they may have the potential to thrive in. Like with me, it was art. My parents saw that, okay, well, she's an artist, so we're going to make sure that she has as much art in her life as possible. And that definitely happened. I think I was 7 years old when I did my first art show. Wow. So to just definitely not limit your child. Don't let other people limit your child. And if you see your child limiting themselves, even if they're unaware of it, you know, talk to them about it and, you know, just let them know that they have no limits.
Absolutely. What do you want parents to teach children or teachers to teach their students about people on the autism spectrum?
I would like for teachers to teach their students, not even just people who are autistic, but people who are different. You need to know that, yes, they may be different, but, you know, they have feelings. Don't treat them like, you know, they're weird, and, you know, don't single them out. Make sure if you see some type of bullying forming, please stop that in the beginning, because bullying is very hard on children. A 10-year-old autistic Black girl just committed suicide because she was being bullied. The parents went to the school district. The school district did nothing. So I would tell teachers, you know, keep an eye out, keep the bullying to a minimum. And if you can eliminate the bullying, please do that. Even though I know it's hard because children are mean, and, you know, teachers, they do their best. I can say that with the experiences that I had with my teachers, except for one, because I was actually bullied by a teacher. I was in third grade and a teacher choked me. So, yes.
Oh my God. And what happened? To the teacher.
That's when
we roll up at the school and we go.
I was such a timid child. I was afraid to tell my parents what happened. And when my dad picked me up, he was like, "Where's my daughter?" And, you know, one of my friends, because kids know stuff, and kids protect other kids who they feel need protection. And my friend told my dad, they were like, "The teacher choked Johnny," because, you know, that's my middle name. And I don't know what he did, but I'd never seen her again.
No. He probably went crazy.
He don't play. He didn't like me now as an adult. He knows that I have these developmental delays. He knows that, like, you know, I'm not always the best at like defending myself. Because I have experienced abusive relationships with others, you know, physical, verbal. So these are all forms of abuse. Like abuse among the differently abled community is very, very high. So, and I didn't tell him about that because most of it was pre-diagnosis. I was living out of state, and it was just like, the bullying is just among autistic people and differently abled people. it runs rampant. And it just gets kind of swept. It gets swept under the rug because look who believed me, a teacher, an authority figure. Right. So
I'm
they don't
so
want that
happy
image of
that you
out there.
Right. I'm so happy that you had friends who were able to communicate that to your dad.
Yeah. And this lady, like as an adult looking at her, she should not have been a teacher because I remember she wasn't my teacher though. She was a substitute. So I didn't understand her style of learning. So I did have a lot of questions. And she said she was tired of me asking questions and she choked me. So it was just like, you know, as a child, you really don't understand things like that.
Right.
And my grandmother actually worked at my school and God was with this woman that day, because if my grandmother was at work that day, nobody would have ever seen her again.
Right.
So,
no.
Yeah, like it starts with the adults. So yes. A lot of adults need to take a step back and look at themselves and make sure that they're not trash humans and passing it down to the younger generations. I have so many like DMs of ignorance in my inbox on Instagram. And I'm just like, so I can't be a proud autistic Black woman. Okay. Because like, even if you like search like the Instagram tags for like autism, a lot of memes come up, which are like mocking autistic people.
That's
so
awful.
Like, yeah, I really don't do it as much as I used to when I first got on.
No.
I was doing it to just connect with other people who were involved in autism in some type of way. If they had an autistic child, if they worked with autistic children, if they were autistic themselves. But now it's a lot easier because, you know, a lot of people, they come follow my page, I follow them back. I don't really have to search the hashtag, but yeah, that's what a lot of the hashtags are of people mocking and saying things they don't need to say. Okay, blah, bye.
That's awful. People really need to learn how to not raise jerks, you know?
Yeah.
Like raise caring people. Or how about this? Like, they just need to not say anything. Just don't say anything at
all.
Yeah.
And
you know,
the thing,
and especially
weird,
DMing you. You know what I mean? Like, why take the time to DM me something if you're going to criticize me? That's not right.
And you don't even follow me. So why are you stalking me? You don't even follow me.
Yeah.
Just DM me. Get out of here. You're
exactly.
In my message request. Go away.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. But, you know, I'm a very sensitive person, but I developed a thick skin at a very young age.
Now, you have written so many books. How many to be exact? Is it 17?
Well, actually, I've illustrated 17 books, but I've written two. And I've put out four. Is it four? Yes. And I've put out four coloring books. So,
wow. Can you tell me about them? Can you tell me
sure,
about them? Oh, my gosh. That's incredible.
Most of the books that I've illustrated just have to do with uplifting our beautiful Black girls of color. Like the one I always promote is called My Melanin, and the author is Renita Pagan. She's the author that I've had the best experience with. And it's no shade to anybody else, but sometimes it's hard to work on a project with another person as a neurodivergent person because, you know, they have to really understand your limits. Understand you can only do so much in one day. And she gave me artistic freedom. So that's why, like, that's the book that I always promote. I'm proud of all my work, but I'm just like proud of this young woman because like she's such an amazing person and she's very understanding. So that definitely is my favorite book that I've worked on. My book, it was supposed to be out in April, but my autistic brain was like, wait a minute, I want to change this. So I kept like changing it, but I feel like we're in the last stages of it right now. So if it doesn't come out this year, it'll be out early 2022, which is fine with me. You know, autistic people don't go away after the month of April. So it's perfectly okay to speak about autism year round. So that's what I'm most proud of. The book that I did, My Melanin, and my upcoming book that will be out shortly.
What's your favorite thing to create?
My favorite thing to create, I would say digital art, because I do art therapy every day, and okay, the type of art therapy that I do is digital art. So I would say that's my favorite. And also, like, it's easier to clean your mistakes up. Like me, I'm a perfectionist, and my dad laughs at me because he said I used to draw pictures and I would like color outside the line and rip up the entire picture. With the digital art, all you had to do is, you know, click, go back, and the mistake is gone. So I'm not as hard on myself when I do that, when I do it that way. So my favorite form of art is digital art and probably theater, because I started in theater also. I did plays as a child. So those are my favorite forms of art. I still recite monologues. It helps me with my memory issues.
Wow, that's incredible. You are incredible. Oh, wait. And you're also a fashion designer? You're also a fashion designer? Can you tell me about that? That's oh my goodness.
Sure. I kind of don't know where to start, because I fell into that by accident. Even though I do believe that nothing is an accident. But I did one show where I was just designing natural hair tees for a fashion show for a few little models with afros to model. And then you know, their parents were like posting it on social media and stuff. And literally, like, within that same week, I had been invited to, I think, either two or three more fashion shows. And I was like, well, I had a good time doing this. The art, the creating is therapeutic. So let me give it a try. Let me do a few more shows. So I just, show after show, I was being invited to different places. And eventually I did the World Natural Hair Show in Atlanta. I did Circle of Sisters in New York. I was on WPLX 11 Morning News. So I did so much with it. And I'm just like, I'm sure there's things I'm forgetting, but yeah, it's amazing. And like, my favorite part is that, like, because I hand paint like images of beautiful girls of color on t-shirts and denim jackets and all of those wonderful things. And like, my favorite thing isn't the actual designing, it's the way it makes the children feel. Mm. Like a mom said to me, she said, my daughter absolutely loves this jacket. She says that it looks like her. Wow. So that has to be like my favorite part of that.
You are absolutely incredible.
Thank you.
You do so much. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like people to know, whether about your art or about autism, that you would like my audience to know?
No, I believe you asked some really good questions. Okay.
Thank you. With everything that you do, do you have time for self-care? And if so, what does that look like for you?
Absolutely. Self-care is a must for me. I start each day with a meditation. Doing cognitive behavioral therapy has taught me to be mindful. And, you know, meditation helps with mindfulness. Like for me, what like the challenges that I go through on a daily basis, if I can learn to be mindful and go minute by minute, you know, day by day, that makes things a lot easier for me and even for those around me. So meditation is definitely, I'm big on meditation and I'm big on gratitude. I write in my gratitude journal every morning for the things that I am grateful for. Even if it's a morning where I have low energy and I'm not feeling my best, I got to get at least one line in that gratitude journal. So meditation, gratitude journal. I like to play in makeup for no reason at all. I don't have any on today because I don't feel good, but anything that can bring me some type of calm, I like to do, or anything that I can learn from. Like, I love to read. I make sure I read every day, even if it's listening to an audiobook, because sometimes it's actually easier for me to just have to listen. Because you know, when you're reading, it involves multiple senses and sometimes it is hard to use more than one sense at a time. So I love podcasts. I love audiobooks and things like that. So I'm big on self-care. I always tell people self-care is not selfish. So don't let anybody manipulate
me. Right.
So definitely self-care. I'm big on it.
Where can people find you? Where can they find your work? You on Instagram? Where can they find you?
Yes, I am Phenomenally Autistic everywhere. Instagram, Phenomenally Autistic. TikTok, Phenomenally Autistic. YouTube, Phenomenally Autistic. Facebook, Phenomenally Autistic. So anywhere where I have a profile, I'm Phenomenally Autistic.
Everybody needs to go follow you. You are an inspiration. And I thank you so much. Thank you for coming on and taking your time. Even while you're sick, you look gorgeous. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. I can't wait to take off this wig. It's like itching, but I'm actually going to run out to the store because like I'm like really picky and my dad bought me some stuff, but and probably sounds like I'm insane, but it has to be like a certain thing and a certain brand and a certain way. Yeah. And, you know, it's all part of the autism and he understands that, he knows that.
Absolutely.
But, and also, just to get some fresh air because fresh air always helps. So I'm going to do that. Can't see my new baby nephews today because, you know, If I have a cold, I might not even have a cold. It might just be my allergies, but it's hard to tell. But, I'm just going to get some air and enjoy the day because I'm thankful for the day.
Great. Thank you so much, Ayana.
Thank you.
You have just listened to the Stay at Home Mom Yeah Right podcast with my mom. I hope you enjoy listening. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you liked it, please give it 5 stars. Thank you.